we're continuing with tape two here, and I'm speaking with Adele Strummer. Okay, you were saying what it was that, how you had the strength to undergo all that you did.
Well, I spoke mostly probably about America, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to be sure that I won't repeat myself, but what I really like to tell to anybody who listens to this tape, at his heart, your beginning in this wonderful world here is hard. You don't find the money on the street. This is the very wrong feelings you have that America is. You have to work hard for it. But if you're willing to work for it, if you're willing to educate, then you will make it here. Maybe you will never be. It depends what you want to do. You might not be rich, but for some odd reason, you will certainly remember that. Your life is different. Your life, you can live in peace. You can live in freedom. You don't have to worry if somebody knocks on the door at night that somebody's going to carry you off to a concentration camp. All I can say, 53926, my number, what I carried for almost a year. I lost my name, and I'm very proud to tell the world today, I'm Adele Dally Strummer. I'm very, very known as Dally because I carry this name Dally for a long time. My parents gave that name to me, and I'm very proud of it, and I use it a great deal. I want to tell you about probably my organization's core. I'll tell you how wonderful it is to have just a small group around me and feeling the support, feeling the giving, and feeling the interest, and most of all, educating those people, and educating them that the life in America is really the best you can have. There is, for instance, I'm the president of this organization. There is my vice president, who is a youngster, Brooke Parrish, who I met in my speaking about this atrocity of the 20th century of European history. I met her many, many years ago as an eighth grader in one of our schools here. Today, Brooke is my vice president. Today, Brooke is the one who is finishing very, very soon college and is going in, probably, I know she's going in for higher education. But most of all, I feel if I close my eyes today, Brooke will carry on for me. Mm. It is important to me that I have touched young lives through Sakoa. I have touched young lives in a sense that I know I can go in peace when my time comes and my message will not be buried. My message for hope, for a world in peace. I have a lot to say about this time, and I hope whoever listens to this tape understands this is a yearning. Why did I survive? Why did I survive? Probably for the same attitude I have today. I'm a very positive person. I always try to exchange the negatives to positives. I believe in that. I believe in everything in your life there is something decent. Maybe I wouldn't be today like I am if I wouldn't have gone this terrible, crucial time in my young years. I believe in God. I believe in the power who is leading me and telling me every day how to conduct my life, how to keep on going and to help others who are in need. I'm happy with the way how my life turned. I have my trial and tribulation like anybody else, but I always thank God for the goodness of life. But mostly, my deepest thank goes to the United States of America, who helped me when I needed that so badly, and let me be a really proud American. Many, many things I could say probably about my past, but I wanted to really, so far it concerns this interview, I would like to close with the reminder that everyone can make a difference. You have to be willing to work for peace. Please learn and accept this tape as something what comes out of my soul, a message of hope for a better world. Being so grateful, most of all, that I could make this tape, I'm grateful to
Janet
Levine, who came and is giving me this opportunity. Of course, the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island means the world to me. I remember when I came in here as a very, very, very confused young woman, 28 and a half years old. And I saw this great lady looking at me, and I felt she's telling me, "Welcome, Delhi, welcome to your new world." I felt that so strong. I looked at many, many times up to this Statue of Liberty, and I, in my own world, in my own words, in my own feelings, I know what that statue means to people like me who needed help, who came here with so full of heart, but not knowing what will happen in this new world to me. But for some odd reason, this great lady gave a lot of courage, what we so badly needed. And for that feeling, I want to thank all the people who worked so hard on this particular project. Ellis Island, to me, was my first step. Yes, indeed, I was a scared, confused, and lost, displaced person, an immigrant. But this country helped me. And I think the moment I felt his help was looking up at Ellis Island and seeing my name, hearing my name. I just looked for the S, but then it came, and then I saw a face, a friendly face. Not that I could speak, but they spoke to me, their faces spoke to me. So after all those years, over 60 years now, I would say it's a long time since the Holocaust ended, but still in my heart, it is alive. There always will be, but for some odd reason, I will never forget my arrival at Ellis Island. I will never forget my feeling, the Statue of Liberty, this great lady gave to me. I came on a boat called General Sturgis in 1951, and unfortunately, we had some trouble. The boat was overloaded. We really had a little trouble coming in, and we pushed this boat in the last probably miles just to get to Ellis Island. But it is unforgettable. The day in March 19, I believe, will be never forgotten in my life. thank this country. I thank Ellis Island. I thank Jane Levine for being with me. And anybody who really is responsible for this project. Only God will bless you to do that, to keep the history, this history alive. The history and the binding between Europe and America. God bless you.
I think that's a wonderful place to end.
Yeah,
okay, so. We'll close. Reflect a little bit about the human nature involved in being a prisoner in these camps and also being the keepers of the prisoners. What do you think you could say about human nature given the atrocity of the situation?
In all my existence, especially in this last 50, 60 years, I spoke a lot. I always get this question. Was there ever any human feeling? Was there ever any God who touched your life, who let you feel like a human being? And I hate to say that. Not in my existence. There were an unbelievable cruelty, unbelievable sadistic, almost sadistic feeling. It was just more or less, you know, when you are in charge. And believe me, all my life I had, beside being of course in prison, I had dogs around me. I love dogs. I would not treat an animal like this. What I really like to bring out here so vividly is that you had to feel this time to be able to speak about this time. You had to be there. We have today, we have films. We have some, one piece is really, to me, this is almost historic, is Schindler's List. Schindler's List is a classic for one reason, because it shows there's one scene, this little boy running from one place to another, and this SS man half drunk stays there and shuts this kid. That's what all about it. This absolutely cruelty of this time. I am the master. I can do with you what I want to do. And to really speak about this, you had to be there. I mentioned that before. I certainly feel very strong towards people who work so vividly on history. But to touch the cruelty, the atrocity, the hopelessness, the more or less being robbed of your dignity, this feeling cannot come from a Meryl Streep in a movie. It has to come in a documentary for people, for instance, like myself, whoever is willing to do it. Because it can't be. You can't put yourself in this particular time when I ate grass and you ate scrambled eggs in the morning. It can't be. I interesting enough, one of the youngest just 2 weeks ago asked that question, what you think about movies who are made in Hollywood about the Holocaust. And I told him, as I will tell you now, there is no doubt in my mind, anything what brings this time alive is valuable. But if you ask me, Meryl Streep can't be me. She is an actress and I'm not. I'm the victim and she's trying to play me. She can't. Mm-hmm. But I can understand that because thank God she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But there is only, it isn't just myself. I speak for anybody who survived this time. Please listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they tell you, just believe me, it was worse. Because we all had no notebooks. We all had no pencils and papers. We work with our mind, what we remember. And somehow we really trying to push away the major atrocities, you know, because our heart and soul isn't strong enough to really relive this. You know, this is why this documentary was really hard. And I would say that I was very fortunate. He's one of my good friends to have a young producer with me. I gave him only pieces of my life, and he made a award-winning documentary out of it. What will eventually, you know, we have to refine a little bit of it. Will be. It was shown already, and it will be shown again.
Mm-hmm.
My ambition. I want to go back. I want to once go back to this, especially hills of Austria, to this Mauthausen. There were hundreds of children who followed me during my filming in 1953, always with the same question. We don't understand. Please tell us. Please tell us. I wanted to speak to the kids of the world. I know their language. I can speak to them. It isn't only that we have to learn about this time in the United States. The youth of Europe today has to be educated. And they're different now. They're different now. They want to learn. I filmed in the dissection room in Mauthausen, and I had about 100 kids standing around. You could hear a needle drop. I told him, if you be quiet, you can listen. I had him in front of the gas chair, of the ovens in Mauthausen. And I always heard the same. I saw those faces with tears. And the, why, Delhi? Why? Why did it happen? Why? And I was able to sit with them on those stone walls up there and tell him why. And this is what I want to do before I can do it anymore. You know, this is a very, very... And I hope I, you know, this is... I hope I be strong enough. I hope my financial situation somehow will give me a boost for that. But I want to do that. I want to speak to the children of the world.
Uh-huh. How do you account for the fact that you couldn't leave the boxcar while your friend was too weak and your husband became abusive? You both went through the horrors of a situation,
well,
and you came out one way and he came out another.
There is, you know, there is two possibilities to take it one by one. I gave Nita's mother a commitment. And as long as I live, if I will give you a commitment today, I will keep it. I wouldn't have left Nita for anything, and she couldn't anymore. She couldn't even stand up. I carried her like a sack of potatoes in my last concentration camp. But I always carried her with me, and I wouldn't have left her. That was why I didn't escape out of this cattle train. So far it concerns Ben, he was, as much as I know, he was tortured very badly. He was put in one of what, they're trying to escape. Gary told me that, and they were caught. And in Dachau, they did hard labor on the outside, Dachau, you know. And they pleaded with the military people who caught them to shut them. They wouldn't. They got him back to the campsite. And the boys were very, 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 very badly, you know. Really, I would say, they got under bad treatments. There was something what they called at that time a Stehbunker. That is just a closet, and you couldn't move in it. And there were rats. Matter of fact, Gary, who is still, he has a big hole in his legs, but was done not particular as an operating procedure, you know. Man's mind snapped. Why it snapped, I can understand it.
Yeah.
I can. He tried, they found him, as much as I learned, they found him. The Russians liberated Dachau, I think. They found him by a wire. He wanted to go over that wire. When they found him there, you know what I mean, got him in a hospital. It took him a year to come back to Vienna, you know what I mean. They had nursed him in a hospital, things like that. Jane, there is no parameter to tell you why some people came out with a stronger mind. I just think what helped me the most was my positive attitude. I wanted to live more, and I have taken an awful lot of punishment, you know, starting with my leg, which still reminds me, you know, but I just know if anything I can, I will try to fight for my life. You know, I believed so strongly in God that I know that, you know, in all my arguments I had, I know he was my best friend. That was my name. Even today I call him, he's my very, very best friend, and this is God. I don't believe in something like somebody sitting up there with a beard. I don't believe in that, but it's in me. Obviously, Ben, he just didn't have it. Maybe he was too sick. He must have, you know, he was without oxygen. He was lying there probably a long time. Whatever did it to him. I had him under, you know, neurologist worked in Europe on him. I mean, everybody felt the same way, you know. It was the shell. It was the face, mm-hmm. was looking at you, but he wasn't, you know. That wasn't the young husband who went out in Theresienstadt. The fellows were forced to work outside, you know, outside the campsite, and they had to do all sorts of work. And he came back in his trousers, you know, with potatoes, you know, to bring potatoes back for us to have something to eat. He was so full of life. He was so full of hope. He was so full of goodness. And I can't tell you particular how it happened, why it happened, but it was done to him. Mm-hmm. And he became really a victim of Hitler's time.
Yes.
He really became a victim of Hitler's time. Still, I hear he's still living. He's living someplace, I think, in Canada. I don't know. People told me he's on a third marriage. He has moments, you know, moments where absolutely everything is, at least this is how I remember him, you know, that this goes back now to 45, you know, uh-huh. 45, 46. He could have been the most lovable guy, and he was snapped, you know. You just never know. He was my certificate, my divorce certificate is saying, I mean, he confesses to all those things.
Yeah.
But I don't even want to talk about it because okay. I know why it happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this very often. Like you say, why you came out this way and he didn't. We have to ask God. I don't know.
It's not it, right.
It just happened, and maybe you have to realize, Jane, that in those days in Vienna, if you have this particular problem, I mean, I'm pretty well medicated, you can use some lithium, or you can regulate. We didn't even have an aspirin over there. There were nothing, you couldn't help anybody. I mean, you know, my return to Vienna was really, you know, where I finally became a free person in Mauthausen. I was 2.5 hours away from Vienna, you know. And I know it was, I had no possibility. Finally, remember that Mauthausen used to be basically a very, very, very known prisoner camp. And two criminals took mercy on neither of me. They carried us down to the station, and here were the Russians, you know. They want to put us in prison because we were Germans all of a sudden. So we traveled on top of a train, We were lying because there were no possibility. I came in to Vienna about, this is the first time after so long I saw a clock. I saw a time. Mm. I couldn't believe it. And I remember that it was 10 minutes after 2 in the morning, you know. On here, on Vienna was so destroyed. And the first night I spent in one of their houses, you know, they took us to their family, and he whistled on the street. The woman opened the door and said, "What are you doing here?" And, you know, I mean, this is how Nina and I, she had a bed for us up there. And we couldn't even sleep in that bed. We couldn't sleep in that bed. We went down on the floor and slept on the floor. We weren't used anymore to a bed. But mm-hmm. even you think about those mm-hmm. things. The next day, you know, we lost the more or less our 2 criminals, you know, and they sent us off with a couple of shillings in those days, and we start walking. Vienna was destroyed, so destroyed. We came. Matter of fact, I remember in realizing who I was. I remember that my grandfather lived in a certain section of Vienna. And I went there because this was the first section what we approached. And of course there were no house there. Everything was bombed. And there was an old lady, you know, and I realized that maybe I can get some information, you know. And I knocked on her door, and of course when she saw what I looked like, she said, "Ooh, get away. So I spoke to her in German that I'm the grandchild of Johann Türk. And she can tell me, and she looked at me and said, "My God, you must be Deli." And, you know, all those things is, then she told me that she thinks my parents might live, but they're on the other side. You have had to cross over the small Danube, and it's a side arm of the Danube, you know, I mean, the canal, really. Mm-hmm. Well, we walked again, and we walked and walked and walked, and can you imagine what we looked like? We came finally, because you asked me that, we finally came and I saw Friseur. Friseur means beauty parlor. I said to Nita, "You know, we gonna get a haircut here." Well, I walked into this guy. Here were all the ladies sitting in front of the store because there was no electricity, drying their hair. And he looked at us and he grinned at me. And that did it. And I just took his coat, said, "Listen, you wash my hair, and you wash my sister's hair, and you better do it, and you style it a little bit." He realized, you know, we were one of the first prisoners who came back to Vienna because we were so close. Well, he washed our hair. I felt better, and after all those years, can you imagine the first hair wash? And then he shaved us a little bit, you know, so we looked a little bit more. You know, I had a rag on my, because I always covered up my head. And we marched again, and then we came to this canal. There were no bridge, there were no nothing, everything was bombed. Make the story short, with the last punishment I received in Mauthausen were my ribs were broken, you know. And I found an old towel and put this on. I know this, the only thing is what can help me. Anyhow, we had to get over there. So I took Nita and I found a rope and hung her onto me. And then we got, how in the world I ever managed this between parts of floating in the water, and we crossed the canal, you know. Of course we were wet, but we crossed the canal. I was a pretty good swimmer in those days. So then, here again, we start marching back. And then finally, I saw this house, where I think that was my parents' home. And will you, God bless my mother, you know. The house was bombed, but she was determined to hang on because that was her home, you know. So I went up three stairways, you know. And then I saw a door hanging like this. And I thought that must be, you know. Well, I opened that door and here was my mother. Oh my, I never forget this as long as I live. Here she was so you know, so aged, but still had some sense of humor. One of the first things she asked me, if I'm hungry. What we did in camp, basically, we cooked in our minds. I made for years the best dumplings I can ever make, because that's what I made, and I told that to Mother. So the American Joint Committee gave them a little flour, you know, prior to this. Mother made on this old little gasoline stove she had there, she made those dumplings. We cried, we ate the dumplings, the best meal I ever had in my life, you know. Those sort of things, you know, you have to. So how on earth, tell me, can somebody like any actress in the world who didn't go through this, how can they do that? How can they? How can they really tell you? How can anybody tell you if you don't have it? How difficult? And then the end, you know, I remember the first Hanukkah I had with my family. You know, prior to this, years ago, there were lavish candlelighters. There were everything was in style. Here we were, my brain-damaged father, my two little brothers, and Lizzy just seeked back from Belgium with two little kids who couldn't speak, you know what I mean? She found those kids. She traced herself back from her concentration camp in Belgium. She traced to find her children. She found her children. They were saved by Belgic people. We were standing around those, you know, there were just a couple of candles and a piece of wood, you know. And it was quite, you know, it was quite a moment to remember. The blessing of God, that we were all there, you know. Mm-hmm. Out of ashes, out of this terrible time, there were faces, you know. There were faces, not very much in style, but faces. Mm-hmm. You know, today, I mean, you have the candelabra again, and you have all those things, and you say to yourself, what means more to me, the memory of this particular time mm-hmm. in 1945,
yeah.
or today, the beauty, the wonderful things, you know. I want to show you that.
We're going to. What I wanted to ask was, I'm going to take this back out again. What I wanted to ask was, so you were reunited with your family in Vienna, and then how long was it before you went to work with the children, and where was that again?
In Vienna in 45, I came back, I realized that my family needed help tremendously, you know what I mean? I saw that. And there was still a very quick rebuilded small hospital for the people who seeked back. And I remember before I was taken in prison, I was a nurse there. Of course, that was another building. But I went there, and there was an old professor he didn't recognize me really, but we started speaking to him and told him who I was. Well, he hugged me, and then I said, by that time, remember, I had those broken ribs. I maybe need help. How about, you know? So he looked at me, and I remember very well, examined this. And then said, look, I think I have to be hospitalized. I said, are you kidding? Here's a uniform. I immediately started working. Broken hip, nothing. He put a circulum, what we call a circulum, around my hip cage. The next day, I started nursing. Well, I could, of course, find a little stuff, a little, you know, there were always some extra food. Became very friendly with our kitchen. I could get this to my family. And from there, in Vienna, in 40, 45, 46, I realized, I was looking at that time not really for Ben, so we did that, but I found those children. This is where I found the children. And I started working with this organization, what we call Bring Them Home. It was my organization, really, and I didn't do it alone. There were a couple of people, you know, who survivors like myself who helped me, you know. And in that bring them home, we rebuilt a home again in that sport facility we had prior to that, Hakoa in Vienna. And we could more or less bring them back, you know. We had him basically in homes, you know, people who had still homes, they took care of those kids like foster homes. But we took him out there, and we had really for a time, we had to get him together in a family surrounding, you know, in more or less a group surrounding. And you couldn't speak to them much about anything, because those kids really, you know, give you one example. I had one day, I discussed it with some of my friends and, you know, helpers, that we needed some food. We had to go shopping. So this little Heinzi realized, he listened to that. The next day he came down in those mountains, right next to the camp, with two chickens in every arm. You need food, here's food. That's all they know. I took more time of myself to apologize to the people up there who get back the chickens. So it was a tough job to teach those kids, to be sure we had some doctors who helped me, you know, health. It took till 51, from 46 till 51. There came some, you know what a shiliach is? No. A shiliach is basically some guys from Israel. He came, and, you know, they lived there in a kibbutz, and he came and he wanted to help those kids and things like that. But I was not, you know, I wanted to be sure those kids have a good home, you know. And it was a tough time. Some of them, we got affidavits for them, we got certificates for them, but most of them went really to the State of Israel. So it took time, and took really, you know, I never forget, for instance, remember that I always worked, I used this on the side. So sometimes I had a very, very difficult and busy life, you know, but my vacations, you know, went always into those kids. And during the time, you know, in Vienna, we got them together as a group. We had, I want to make sure before we sent them away that there were no parents living any place. You know, that was unbelievable. Some of them found, you know, some of them really came and that's my kid, you know. I mean, but most of them, we couldn't find any relatives, we couldn't find anything, and finally they, you know, and they went their ways and went into Israel. Most of them went in the kibbutz, you know, mm-hmm. one of those mess things, what they have there. And
did you see them turn from being kind of wild little animals to being children again?
Well, yeah, we worked very hard with them. You know, we had, for instance, what you call an Onik Shabbat, Friday night. We tried. I realized the best thing is to songs. God wasn't their friend. You know,
yeah.
Don't tell me about God. You know? Yeah. So through sport, you could really, you know, You made him, interesting enough, I had this idea. I coached him a play. We needed some money. So again, the Americans helped us with the trucks, you know, with American trucks. Took all those children to the first, what was Brindermichel, also near Vienna, for instance, where that was, you know, they had all the people there who didn't have any homes. It was more or less a transit situation where people came back from different concentration camps, and they had to somehow. I know I had a family in Europe, so I went to Vienna, but there were so many without any identity, without anything, so they had those transit homes. So we went there with those kids and put up a play, you know, and made, for some odd reason, you know, at least, again, Americans helped us, you know, always a joint helped us to make a little money to keep this thing rolling, you know. This is, I mean, you have to feed 50 faces, you know. So it wasn't an easy time, but it was a challenging time. And as I always say, I needed those kids as badly as they needed me. Here I was, you know, pretty hurt by myself. I felt terrible over my, unfortunately, broken marriage. But I needed those kids to really, you know, and this is why God works in some unbelievable ways in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. He sent me that job, really, to make a go out of it, you know. And,
Can you say anything about, I don't know quite how, can you say anything about how you came back from the situation of having, well, you did retain some dignity through everything, but how you then came back to a life.
It was not easy, you know. For instance, I remember very well when I walked, that was quite some time, when I walked the streets of Vienna. I walked, I always looked back, You know, I always watched where I was, where my steps took me, because it was very important to me that nobody's behind me. I was one of the things I had, and of course the nightmares, and I still have them, you know, occasionally. I say, you know, we just lost our little dog 2 weeks ago. He was really, you know, every time I. Yeah, it hit me hard at night. He started barking, so I know everything was fine, you know. Mm-hmm. It isn't easy to go back, but I didn't give myself much time. I realized immediately that I was needed. I was needed by my family. I was needed by those children. And I wanted us best as I could to get back to a life, you know. And of course I had a profession. This old professor told me as much, you know, never mind Delhi, we can have a patient, but we need a nurse, you know. So that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. So you do basically what you have to do. And I must say that I'm very grateful the way I came out of this life. Mm-hmm. Maybe it made me a better person. Maybe it gave me some understanding what I might not have had. I could have done very easily without it. But if it has to be, mm-hmm. if it has to be, people always say, why me? Why not me? What's so different about me? I'm a Jew. I suffered with the rest of them, you know. It all depends how you see it, how you take it, and what you make out of it. It is your approach. You're absolutely positive. There's only one life God's giving you, and you better make the best out of it. I have done this. I was a little toddler in school. And I have done it where I was a prisoner. And I've done it where I came to this country. And I'm still doing it.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for a wonderful interview.
It was my pleasure. I hope it will help.
Oh, it's a very big asset to our collection. Thank you. I've been speaking with Adele Strummer, and I'm signing off. Deli Strummer, and I'm signing off.